Good singing, Darren. Isn't that one of your favorite songs, Up From the Grave? I have quite a bit I want to cover in the opening this morning. First of all, you see a can here. This is one somebody just turned in. That thing's heavy as like lead. But we have a can drive, a reminder, that we're doing for the Timothy Hill Ranch. It's a home for underprivileged inner city children and on the Isle of Manhattan, or Long Island. And we'll be having this drive is going to pay for all new carpeting for the all the boys' rooms, because it's getting pretty old. And they appreciate everything you're doing. There's extra cans up on the lobby in there. And if you didn't get one yet, go ahead and grab one. And you have until about the end of March before we turn it in to them. And we will have a youth trip there as well. Day of service, day of fellowship, and a day of worship. And also, if you could keep Dave Miller in your prayers. Tomorrow he travels to Bear Valley Bible Institute in Denver. And last year we went out, did a research trip. Dave joined me. And they had such good conversation. Dave, as you know, is a police officer. And he's actually going to be teaching a very detailed class for Bear Valley on risk assessment, and something that really not only just, you know, people who might be in danger, but people who think they're not in danger. It's important to teach that to the preachers in training, because sometimes they don't really size up the risk that they could actually be in. And pray that he has a safe trip out there and back, and of course that he helps the college there. Represent us well, brother. And also Deke Gallo, that's Tana Birdwell's mom. Last week he received an email regarding that she was in very, very critical health. She was actually at the point of death. The church offered up prayers for her. She did get better. She was released Friday, and then she's back in the hospital on Saturday with pneumonia now. So continue to pray for her. And I also want to make a special mention of Lana Radzinko. Yeah, you. If you didn't already know, she is going to be attending Messiah College. She received a four-year scholarship paying over 60% of her whole bill. And you need to congratulate her on that. It's another feather in your cap, since you're wearing that hat now. And also, there were a number of people in regards to the sermon last week, 30 Days of Thanksgiving, that have asked me if I had any more copies of that calendar. And I put some more on the back. It's also on our website. Just look for the sermon under the sermon category. And then tonight and next Sunday, I have a special two-part lesson from Acts 26, which we're covering now, about the almost persuaded Christian. If you like the book Crazy Love, you should really like those two lessons, because I was very excited knowing that we'll be covering that this evening and next Sunday evening. Next Sunday, Bill Delks from Sealands Grove and myself will be swapping pulpits. So he'll be preaching a lesson to you, bringing you up to date at Sealands Grove, and I'll be doing the same up there. But I will be back on Sunday night. Give him a warm welcome when he comes. And Darren, by the way, he's requested to have Lord's Supper after the sermon. So it has a lot to do with that. In the scripture reading that Chris Dodds had read, it was about what happened to Jesus' body after he died. It's a great moment of history, the burial of Jesus Christ in the tomb. And in just 3 days after they sealed that tomb, he would be back. In fact, he was entombed in what we would call a mausoleum space. In reality, though, what's important about that is, in the scheme of things, with the gospel being the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, 1 Corinthians 15:1 through 4, what would it be like if you didn't have the burial scene? It would totally change it. Jesus just wasn't medically declared dead and then shocked back to life. That's like dying and being back to life. Jesus wasn't supposed to be dead. He was really dead. He was so dead, he was graveyard dead. And without that, Jesus could not be confirmed the Son of God with power by the resurrection of from the dead if he was not for sure dead. There's what's called the swoon theory, where they say, agnostics or atheists will say, well, you know, there's this theory, the swoon theory. Jesus really, he went unconscious in a very, very deep state. And when he was put into the tomb, the cool of the tomb revived him, and he came out of the tomb. He escaped from the tomb and went away to live the rest of his life in India or some other location. Really? I had a biology student I was studying with one time. He proposed that. And I said, well, the embalmers who took care of that said he was dead. Pilate, the governor, said he was dead. Men who killed people for a living said, he's dead. Have him take him down. All of the people Jesus knew saw he was dead. Everybody there that witnessed it said he was dead. Now, who did you meet who said he wasn't? Well, it's just a theory. I said, well, let's keep it that way. Because the people who were there, who saw it, who recorded it, said, John said, these things I write unto you. He documents it. All these people said this happened. Graveyard, very, very important. And that's the second important part about that passage. The primary thrust is, of that passage, was about the burial of Jesus. But what I want to turn the focus to this morning is Joseph. Joseph of Arimathea. He was a prominent leader in the Jewish Supreme Court, Mark 15:43. He was awaiting the kingdom of God. He was waiting for that kingdom to come, just like many others of that day. Being a secret disciple of Jesus, he was one of the members of the court that gave disapproval to the execution of Jesus. However, it was his tomb that would confirm that his champion was dead. He had a new hewn tomb carved out from the rock, a burial spot. By the way, this was not an afterthought. God already prearranged the tomb that Jesus would be buried in. That was a prearrangement done ahead of time. How do I know? It was predicted in Isaiah 53, verse 9. His grave was assigned with wicked men, yet he was with a rich man in his death. He would be buried in that rich man's tomb. Not bad, a 600-year plan in the making, was it? But God already knew, long before even creation, his son would be put in that tomb. And that leads me to the topic of this morning's lesson. For recently, Jana and I, we purchased our burial estate at Rolling Green Cemetery here in Camp Hill. Yep, we did it. We went all the way. We have a niche space. You walk into the mausoleum. If you just look right, have a nice little niche space, we'll be cremated. You can't be cremated, If God can bring dust up from the ground and make a man, he can bring cremains up and remake me a new body. And this might sound twisted to you, but it was actually our anniversary gift to each other. Hey, babe. I love you. I love you alive and dead. No, it wasn't like that, but it was our anniversary gift to each other. That sounds rather morbid, but I don't want you to think of it as morbid. You might ask, Why did Doug and Jana buy cemetery property over at Rolling Green? I'd say I'm glad you brought that up, because that's the title of this morning's sermon. Why did Doug and Jana buy cemetery property at Rolling Green? I called Renee up. She's one of the managers at the cemetery. Now, raise your hand, Renee. See that? That's her hand. It's attached to her body. That's her. I called her up and I said, hey, I'm going to have a sermon. It's going to be titled this on December 4th. You might want to come down and hear what we're saying about you. She invited. Other ladies, raise your hands. See, that whole pew is filled with Rolling Green people. See, if you want to have invitees, just tell them you're going to be talking about them. No, but actually, I invited them because I want them to see what I'm going to show you. Why did Doug and Jana buy cemetery property at Rolling Green? First reason, out of acceptance of reality. Out of acceptance of reality. The scriptures are very clear concerning the reality of death. Hebrews 9:27 says, it's appointed unto man once to die. Okay, we're going to die. Job 14:5 says that our days are determined, the number of months is with God. God already has seen your death. He knows exactly how long you're going to live. And he'll let you in on that secret in the future. Ecclesiastes 3 verse 2 states, there's a time to give birth and a time to die, recognizing that death is a natural step that follows birth into this world. If you are born, you will likely die. Barring the resurrection before you die, and I even firmly believe to get that new body, God's going to have you go through a quick death. You're going to be saying, whoa, my back hurt. I guess it doesn't now. I got a whole new body. Is what Joshua referred to in 23 verse 13 of Joshua of going all the way of the earth. Jesus said concerning his own death in John 12:24, truly, truly, I say unto you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains alone. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. Other than Enoch, Elijah, and those who will be here when the Lord comes back, we are all facing an impending death. Knowing that to be true, we tend to put that thought of death in the back of our minds. We just tuck it away like it's not going to happen. It makes me feel creepy. You've been watching too many Vincent Price shows, my friend. Death is a reality. It's not healthy to think it isn't. Purchasing your cemetery estate confirms that you are mortal and will depart this life sometime in the future. Years ago when I was in the cemetery business, I had a man who we had in-house financing, so we had flexibility on the contracts, and there was a man, very religious. He had the order up there, and I asked him, I said, you just need to sign here, we'll have you on your way. And he said, well, wait a second now, what happens if resurrection occurs before I die? And I'm thinking, are you really? Honestly, do you want to go there? Okay, but I said, remember I had flexibility to do this. I said, no problem. I wrote on the bottom of the contract, in the event of the resurrection, come in for a full refund. He signed the contract too. Point is, the reality is we're going to die. And when you buy your cemetery property, you pay for your funeral, you take care of these things, and there's a certain comfort that will come to you. I can literally describe that day when Jan and I went ahead and got that taken care of. I had a great joy in my heart. I had a great comfort in knowing that death was real and inevitable and not something to be feared as a Christian. I was humbled yet empowered. I was sad and yet felt appreciative for the life I had had thus far and the life I will have the rest of it. 1 Corinthians 15:55-57. Oh, death, where's your sting? Oh, death, where is your victory? The sting of death is sin, and the power of sin is the law. But thanks be to God who gives us victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. Don't be afraid of it. If I ever get in that situation where, you know, you might be out and they say, I saw a light. Don't go to the light. I'm going to run like Forrest Gump toward the light. You won't even be able to catch me. Bring the light on. At some point, everyone within the sound of my voice will be facing the reality of death. The question is, have you accepted that point of your mortality? We see salvation through the death of Christ, and we inherit salvation through the death of ourselves. We cannot appreciate the coming resurrection unless if you hold in reality the death that is impending. We bought cemetery property, number one, out of acceptance of the reality of our deaths. That's reason number one. But there's more. You know, I don't just have one point for a sermon. I want to tell you about this one man. He was fighting death big time. He was a Turkish watch repairer. His name was Al Yuko. He had built himself a special grave that had an 8-inch window on the top. And his plan was this: to install a push button electric alarm inside the grave. And if he's buried alive by mistake, he'd wake up and push it. And it'd have electric light that would burn in his casket for 1 week. And if for some reason they were to check that grave once a week or every day and look down through that little glass window, make sure he's still dead. I think the guy is really scared to death, don't you? Here's another reason why Janet and I bought cemetery property at Rolling Green out of commitment to our marriage. Commitment to our marriage. It says of the first marriage in Genesis 2, verse 24, "For this reason a man shall leave his mother and father and cleave unto his wife, and the two shall become one flesh." Ironically, Jesus uses the same phrase in Matthew chapter 19. And the word that Jesus uses has a history, the joined together. It's commonly used in referring to two wooden pieces being glued together, like making a chair or a table, some type of construction where you're trying to permanently fasten it together. Cleave, that's the word. Just like we have this, it's not all one piece of wood carved out, it's many. The pews that you're on, they're fastened together. Jesus, the carpenter, uses a word, and Jesus was a quality carpenter. I couldn't imagine him lifting something over that says, "Made in China," or something on it. Probably etched in, "Jesus." Bet you that would sell for a lot on eBay. That's what marriage is intended to be, a lifelong covenant. You don't enter into that covenant, you agree to take this woman for 3 years. That wouldn't be good, would it? I once said to a couple that came in, they were having some problems, and I said, "Well, it sounds like you need to renew your wedding license. Did you check and see if it was out of date?" He said, "Well, I didn't know you were supposed to do that." I said, "Yeah, every 5 years you gotta go in and recertify for it." He said, "Nobody told me a thing about that." I said, "It's not true, but it should be in your heart about that." Marriage is intended to be a lifelong covenant. Janet and I were married many years ago. And as you can see from the picture up here, okay, a lot of things have changed since then. Okay? See, I always wear a pillow under here because people have respect for guys with guts that hang over. You're all fans of the show Canon growing up. But on that day, we took vows. On that very day, we took vows to stick together for better and for worse, for richer and for poorer, in health and in sickness, until death do us part. You know the routine. There are many opportunities to demonstrate the death do us part. You can buy some life insurance. You can, you know, you have kids together. There's a lot of indication that you're in it for the long run. But I'll be real honest with you. I don't know anything else that I could buy that says I'm with you the rest of my life. All the decisions communicate longevity in marriage, but only one that I can think of in material purchase. You buy a house, houses come and go. You buy your cemetery property. I'll tell you what I said to Jana. As we walked out of the mausoleum, I said, you know this means we're stuck together now. She says, I know. But it made me feel good. Now, you don't all have to go out and get cemetery property for your anniversary. It might not work in your family. It did in mine. But it's interesting to note, in New Testament times, that a man who had his burial estate already arranged, and they really expected during Jesus' day, you were to have your burial spaces ahead. If it was in your budget, you had it done. Because the logic of it was, if a man was going to give his daughter away to another man, if you can show me after you're dead, you're still going to be influencing and helping my daughter, then I know in your life you will be doing the same. It wasn't by a fluke that Joseph of Arimathea had a newly cut tomb. Many, many burial estates in those days. But we left that cemetery a few weeks back feeling pretty good about our decision. We bought cemetery property out of commitment to our marriage. But there's more. Stay tuned. Back from commercial. Out of responsibility to our family. Out of responsibility to our family. There's an ancient record of a cemetery transaction that took place in Genesis 23. Abraham was in a foreign land of the Amorites when his wife Sarah died. He was in need of a burial space for her and went to the local owner of some land named Ephron. If you look at Genesis 23, verse 17 through 20, is where I'm reading from. So, Ephron's field, which is Machpelah, which faced Mamre, the field of the cave which was in it, and all the trees which were in the field, were all within the confines of its border, were deeded over to Abraham for a possession in the presence of the sons of Heth before all whom went in at the gate of the city. And after this, Abraham buried Sarah, his wife, in the cave, which is in the field of Machpelah, facing Mamre, that is Hebron, in the land of Canaan. So the field and the cave that is in it were deeded over to Abraham for the burial site by the sons of Heth. That is a burial estate. This cave and the surrounding areas became known, the mausoleum space of Abraham, Isaac, Rebekah, Sarah, Jacob, Leah. This wasn't for Sarah. Today it's referred to as the Tomb of the Patriarchs. And I don't have the building up there on the notes, I do. It's the second most holy site in all Judaism, only behind the Temple Mount. They have a beautiful structure built over it. It's like they built a museum over the top of it. It's called Tomb of the Patriarchs. When a loved one dies, there are certain responsibilities that must take place for the burial. And if the deceased has not taken that time to address it, take care of things, someone from his circle, his or her circle, will be faced doing it. There's a lot of difficulties that arise, a lot of questions. What would mom and dad have wanted for the service? Where are they going to be buried? Who's going to pay for this? The Apostle Paul wrote Timothy in 1 Timothy 5 verse 8, if anyone does not take care of his own, especially those of his own household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. Now I know this is referring to the basic necessities of life, food and raiment. But in principle form, can it not also refer to that which leaves your descendants in poverty? countless sons, daughters, and other family members every year will face a daunting task of having to scrape together their last pennies to try and do what's dignified. Many thousands of families every year will face burial decisions without any input from loved ones. Many widows have longed for just 5 minutes to be back together with their husbands and just to ask the question, is this what I should do? I personally witnessed family members of a deceased mother argue to the point of fisticuffs over stressful personal and monetary decisions to be made at the moment of duress. Jan and I chose what we wanted. We did. What we could afford. What we felt was dignified and what we knew our family would appreciate. In fact, we will have a picture in our niche unit. We already know what we want. We got a nice big one. It's beautiful. I'll take you out and show it to you sometime. Let you touch it. But inside, behind that glass, we're going to have my urn and Jana's urn. We're going to have whatever our family is at that time. We're going to have a sealed photo put behind it. And I'm going to have an open Bible pointing to a verse. I'm excited. I'm going to wait to die, but boy, I tell you, I got something to look forward to, though. I mean, I'm excited. Everybody who's going to go into that mausoleum, they're going to know this. That, whoa, what's this? This man and this woman loved each other, loved their family, and loved God. That's all I need to say. Why did Doug and Janet decide to buy their burial estate at Rolling Green? Because out of responsibility to our family. You know, not far from here, there's a grave of Thaddeus Stevens. Shortly before the Civil War, a young lawyer came down from Vermont, settled in Adams County, Pennsylvania. There he saw fugitive slaves escaping through the Underground Railroad. And this man, this lawyer, Thaddeus Stevens, says, hey, I'm gonna be a conductor for this. I'm going to help free slaves. The irony of the thing entered his soul and he gave himself with all powers to combat the evil of oppression, of slavery. When a great crisis to which all those events were pointing had broken out over the nation, Thaddeus Stevens is likely perhaps one of the most powerful influences in the government of the United States that dealt with slavery. When he came to die, the only attendants at his funeral were two black preachers. He wasn't a well-liked congressman. But today, if you go to his gravesite in the midst of Lancaster, a shabby cemetery in the intersection of North Mulberry and West Chestnut Street, you can see his tomb. And on his tomb, he chose where he would be buried. He chose what he wanted on his marker. And this is what his marker says. Finding that other cemeteries were restricted as to race by charter rights, I have chosen to lie in this humble spot in order that I might testify, even in my death, to those principles which I have advocated through a life. That says quite a bit. He had that taken care of, so people he loved didn't have to have it done, but in doing so, he could do it the way that he wanted to. Here's the fourth reason. Out of love for our church family. Wait a second, you keep me away from this, Doug. No. That's one of the reasons why Jana and I chose to buy cemetery property at Rolling Green. Yeah, because of you. It's your fault. In Genesis 49, verses 29 through 50, verse 1, there's a moving event in the life of Jacob. He was on his deathbed and had just completed the final charge to his sons. And then he made a request, and here's what that was. He says, I'm about to be gathered to my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field of Ephron the Hittite, the cave that is in the field of Machpelah. final two verses of that quotation go like this. When Jacob finished charging his sons, he drew his feet into the bed and breathed his last, and was gathered to his people. Then Joseph fell on his father's face and wept on him and kissed him. It's a very moving event. Kind of gives me chills every time I see it. Love of a son for his father and a father for a son. The term gathered to my people was a reference to death and having the offspring gathering and dealing with what would need to be dealt with. Jacob requested to be taken the great distance back to the cave of Machpelah, not to be buried in Egypt. And why? Because his people, that's home back there. That's where he's from. He's not from Egypt. He's only been there for 17 years. He's dead now. But he's going to go all the way back. Big trip. Hebron was his home, not Egypt. Jana and I have resided in many places in our lives. She was born in Virginia, and I was born in Nebraska. She grew up in Wisconsin and Iowa, or as they say in Wisconsin, Wisconsin. You can always tell who comes from there. As husband and wife, we lived in many locations in Iowa, once in Texas, here at Camp Hill for the last decade. Over one-fifth of my life has been here. When we were making our decision to buy our cemetery property here at Camp Hill, it was out of love for this congregation. Because you're our people. I don't know if you know that or not. Just because I'm the preacher doesn't make you not our people. When we're making that decision, we did it out of love for the congregation. That's one of the reasons. There have been many church families that we've been part of through the years, but you people, what do you mean by you people, are my people. You people are Janice's people. You people are my family's people. There is nowhere else that we could be more gathered to my people than among you people. Where would I go? My children were mostly raised here. You've always been precious family to us. We have weathered the bad times and savored the good times. We've watched many born into the world and many others born again into Christ. We have shared together dreams, goals, passions, struggles, tears, and joys. We might even someday move to another place. We might go to one of the other 50 states. We might go to somewhere else in the world someday. But you know what? The bottom line is, we'll be coming back from Egypt because you are my people of our lives. We bought cemetery property at Rolling Green out of love for the church family. It wasn't too hard to make up our mind. We've never had a better church family ever. Unless if you all become Judases and Jezebels and have a preacher lynching day or something, it'll probably stay that way. So make up your mind. We did. Make up your mind. Following the burial of Abraham Lincoln in 1865, as you know, his casket was moved 17 times, chiefly to prevent it from being stolen or held for ransom. Six men nearly succeeded once on a night in 1876, but they were surprised and frightened away by a custodian when leaving the tomb with the body. Consequently, it was hidden under a pile of scrap lumber in a cellar during the next 2 years. So in 1901, the casket has been locked up ever since then. Here's how they did it. With a steel cage buried in solid cement 10 feet below the ground. And now they built a big tomb over the top of it. Jan and I went to go see it this year on the way back from Iowa. Very impressive structure. They finally had to make up their mind what they were going to do with Lincoln's body and made it permanent. We bought our cemetery property out of acceptance of reality, commitment to our marriage, responsibility to our family, and out of love for you, the church family. I didn't want you to think I was just weird because I had it. If you don't think those are good reasons, then come up with better reasons than that. They were more than enough for me to make that decision. But an even greater decision isn't your earthly death. The question is, will you die to yourself and live to Christ? For all those who die in Christ Jesus will be very happy on that day of resurrection. We're all facing an imminent death. But it's your decision if you will die to Christ today. Have you been immersed for the forgiveness of your sins? Do you believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God? Are you willing to serve Him the rest of your life? Die to yourself, live to Christ? That's what your plan is. You believe there's a future death, burial, resurrection, and you believe in Jesus' death, burial, resurrection, and you're willing to live a life of death, burial, resurrection, water's warmed up, it's ready to go, you can be immersed into Jesus Christ today. But make sure you understand what you're doing. You don't mess with death, either spiritually or physically. Show it respect. With that in mind, if you'd like to respond to this invitation at this point, please do so while we stand and sing.